All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your stamina. And we are at the closing session of the summit. We have one plenary and a panel left, and then we're all free to travel back to our respective homes, hopefully energized and ready to go. It's my honor to introduce Dr. Sarah Fidler, the senior lecturer at Imperial College, an HIV expert. She is leading of trial in Africa, studying issues including the effectiveness of immediate treatment for people living with HIV/AIDS, and she has been tasked with the poster rapporteur's review.
Well, thank you very much. I feel very humbled to have this task, and particularly right at the end of the day when everybody has heard endless, really very eminent people discuss their work, and now here's me discussing other people's work. But I had the very nice task of looking through all the abstracts and picking out three, we decided in the end, which scored the highest score by the reviewers, to just present in essence what they're about. And then I'm very lucky to have on our panel here the presenting people who've done all the work, so that when you ask the questions, and they will answer them. And I hope I've done a service to all this work that is not being presented here. We've had some really fascinating presentations on the abstracts and the posters, which you've all had a chance to read, hopefully. And the ones we've chosen today are mostly about implementation and how to do it and experiences of how to do it, because I think we've heard an awful lot about the science behind it, the challenges behind it, and I hope what the posters that I'm going to talk to you about today will leave with a very positive sense of what really can be achieved. So for the next 30 minutes, I'm going to talk about these three abstracts that were chosen. I'm going to give you an initial summary of those abstracts and then discuss with the study PIs with questions, I hope, from the floor about the details of their presentations. So the first presentation is from a group in Malawi led by Peter McPherson, who is here. It's abstract number 23, and it was looking at within a large community randomized trial in Blantyre in Malawi, the initiation of antiretroviral therapy following home self-testing for HIV. So two really novel approaches to get around many of the challenges we've talked about staff and resources. And just briefly, the background of this research question is that HIV self-testing offers a unique new opportunity to increase current suboptimal population levels of testing. They found very high uptake of self-testing, up to 92%, and these were very accurate in previous published work from this group in Blantyre. But little is known that once these people self-test at home, how do we link them into care and particularly put those people who need it onto treatment? So in the context of introducing home-based HIV self-testing, the question this research project set out to answer is, what's the impact of home initiation of care on population-level uptake of treatment, in fact, the uptake of testing itself, the willingness to report an HIV self-test result to a community nurse, and six-month cohort outcomes? What happened to those people who were initiated onto treatment through this program? So the study design, as I say, is nested within a much larger community randomized trial that's looking at self-testing with a TB outcome, which is led by Liz Corbett. And from the 14 communities that were randomized within the larger trial to being self-tested or facility-based testing, individual communities, so not individual people, had a second tier of randomization where they could test themselves for HIV, and they had an option of initiating immediate treatment in the home by healthcare professionals, or they could go to the facility at the local healthcare centre. And the study endpoint was a six-month record of whether the people had actually initiated treatment or not. So the study design is an area around Blantyre, and as you can see in the red are the communities that were randomly allocated to facility initiation of care only. And in the blue, these are the communities where they had an option of having home initiation of treatment. And the important thing to point out here is that the distances from some of these communities to those healthcare centres, which are in the Red Cross line. So if you lived in the northernmost areas, you had quite a long way to go to facility-based care, whereas obviously if you were closer to the more southern healthcare centres, this became perhaps less of an issue. This is occurring in urban neighbourhoods in Blantyre. The total adult population is 16,600 individuals, and the adult HIV prevalence is approximately 18%. And communities were randomised on a one-to-one basis to either initiate treatment at home or to go to a healthcare centre. And the main trial results showed clearly here that ART initiation was increased by threefold for those people who were offered home-based initiation compared to those who had to go to the local facility to start their treatment. And who are the people who started treatment, or how does it pan out? And here you can see on this slide that the home initiation of HIV care after self-testing was significantly increased in the population of people who could initiate therapy at home. And how, for the main trial outcome, the six-month cohort outcome showed that of those people in the dotted line who started at the facility outcome, they had 76% were retained in compared to 71% who had only home-based care. The important thing here is there's no significant statistical difference between the two arms, but it shows you that for both groups of people, by 6 months, there's actually a significant drop-off, in fact. Perhaps that's a negative way to look at this data, but, you know, 75% of people 6 months later were retained in care, but that meant what happened to those 30%? And I'm sure Peter will talk to us a bit more about exactly the details of this. So in conclusion from this study, the option of home initiation of HIV care during an HIV self-testing intervention study substantially and significantly increased ART initiation and reporting of positive HIV test results within those communities. The uptake of HIV self-testing was high, 58% over the 6 months of the study, and it has a high potential to increase the uptake of self-HIV testing. The careful monitoring and support of home initiators is required to avoid losing that initial population benefit if this is to be a sustained intervention. So what I plan to do now is leave you with that thought in your head, and I'm just going to pause so that you can write down your questions, and then I'm going to go on to the other two presentations. So I'm just going to talk about all three at once, and then we'll take questions at the end. So the next abstract is abstract number 5 from Malawi once again, which again I'd just like to point out, for us living in the north, we should learn a lot from these studies, and I think there is no reason why we can't take some of these really powerful messages to our own countries. So option B plus, as I'm sure you're aware, which is the lifelong treatment for HIV-positive pregnant and breastfeeding women, has been implemented in Malawi for over a year now. And this is a report led by Dr. Zengami Chirwa and his team, who have looked at healthcare facility data to see how many women have gone on to treatment and remained in care on therapy after initiation of option B plus. So the background, as I'm sure you know, is Malawi started implementing option B plus from July 2011. This approach has not yet been implemented on a population level anywhere else in the world to date. And therefore, Malawi quite rightly recognises the importance of documenting their achievements and the lessons learned that they can share with the rest of us. The objective of this particular abstract is to investigate the proportion of pregnant and breastfeeding women who initiate and remain on ART before and after option B plus was implemented. So the methods of this study were that this is reporting of programmatic data with all the confounders that we all understand about that, but it's data that was reported back on their M&E supportive supervision visits from every ART clinic across the whole country, which is 672 units. They receive quarterly reports, and there is a cohort analysis including HIV, what's called commodities, which includes drugs, treatment, tests, etc. And the analysis is a comparison between the period pre-option B plus implementation, which is January to June 2011, versus post-option B plus implementation, which is the same time period, January to June 2012. And as you can see, the first important slide here shows that in order to actually achieve option B plus to the majority of women attending these centres, there was an almost doubling of the number of sites that were antenatal or maternity healthcare sites that had the capacity to deliver antiretroviral therapy between the red arrow, which is when option B plus started, and then up to the end of 2012. And the overall results of this programme showed that the uptake of treatment through antenatal services, so on the left-hand side you see the pre-option B plus numbers, and there was 2,398 pregnant and lactated women initiating ART. Now, we haven't got the details of what triple or monotherapy they were on, because if you remember, they were implementing a mixture between option A and option B, so some of these women were just having AZT monotherapy and some were having triple therapy for their own health. And in total per quarter during that time period, it was reported 18,000 individuals were recorded to be on antiretroviral treatment. In contrast, the post-option B plus implementation, so that's up to June last year, there was now 15,973 pregnant and lactating women who had initiated on ART essentially an A-triplet type of combination. And in total, that was 30,000 individuals within that population who had initiated ART per quarter, so a huge increase. And most significantly, in terms of PMTCT programs, 79% of women on option B plus were attained alive on treatment at 12 months after initiation. So a huge success of this program. So here's a slide to show you the reasons for ART initiation. And as expected, the pregnant women represent most of those women in the pre-option B plus, and the breastfeeding women represent 7,000 of the breastfeeding women who then went back to care to start treatment after the initiation of B plus. And this is another important slide, really, to show us at what stage were these women initiating treatment. And as expected, the WHO stage 4 represented 10% of people initiating treatment in the pre-option B+, not changed hugely in the post-option B+, but one would hope they're mopping up those women who needed treatment anyway. But the WHO stage 1 and 2 has really increased quite significantly, so they're getting women on treatment who are no longer as sick, which I think we would all feel as clinicians is a really very positive outcome of this programme. So finally, how sustainable is this? Well, the National Clinical Monitoring Programme has been established with 350 mentors who've been trained at district level to support the providers in how to implement and integrate the guidelines at a site level. And there's a national M&E system which is in place with 20 teams going out to every one of those 652 sites to collate and collect the data. And I think we all understand, people working in the field, particularly in resource-limited settings, that this is a massive feat to be able to collect data that is in any way valid. So the main lessons learnt from the Malawi group is that they felt, and I'm reporting what Zengani has told me, but please do ask questions to him at the end, that the ART initiation and follow-up of pregnant women really worked best by integrating their antiretroviral services within the maternity and antenatal services. So rather than expecting HIV-positive pregnant women, as was prior to this programme, to go to a second healthcare facility to get their ARVs, they did it all at once. And I think that is a really important lesson for many of us working in the field. So what happened to those lost to follow-up women, women who never started treatment despite the programme? Many of them never came back after their initial visit. And again, Zengani, I'm sure, will share some more of this data. So we're not sure at the moment what the exact reasons are for non-initiation, but again, we've discussed at length at this meeting that probably many of the very important social factors are what is limiting those women, and we need to all work together on and how we can best deliver that. So in conclusion from that Malawi study, option B plus has led to a dramatic increase, as we heard on Sunday, 700% in ART uptake amongst HIV-infected pregnant and lactating women, with really very impressive retention up to 12 months of those women on treatment. Just to put it into the context, I understand that on average in Malawi, women breastfeed for about 2 years. So if these people were initiating treatment at pregnancy, many of them are still breastfeeding. So that's very good news for those babies. And the issues of loss to follow-up need to be addressed in HIV-infected pregnant women initiating treatment at the antenatal services. So finally, the third abstract, by no means the least, is one that I thought was really interesting in terms of what are the community perspectives on using treatment for prevention. And again, I think this was delivered in a survey with a broad definition of what it means for treatment of prevention. And the questions asked for this were both treatment as prevention of the HIV-positive individuals as well as the role of PrEP. And I wasn't aware of this, so it's quite nice to know, but before the WHO guidelines were changed this year, there was a multi-country e-consultation which was led by the groups you can see at the top here working with WHO to try and collect individual information from the communities across many different countries to try and inform how these guidelines should be taken forwards. So the background was that the International HIV-AIDS Alliance and GNP Plus were commissioned by WHO to establish values and preferences and recommendations to inform our latest WHO ARV guidelines. The community consultation to this level has never previously been undertaken. It includes a four-week e-discussion, an e-survey which we're going to present in this poster today, and focus group discussions. And there was a separate section in Malawi and Uganda around option B+. So an example of some of the questions, and again, we have the team here representing to us answer any of your questions in a moment, but the online questions are summarised here, and they were divided, as is appropriate, in two topics, treatment for prevention and PrEP. And they were asking about people's views about whether they should be offered treatment, what are the challenges and barriers to acceptance of treatment, and what should be done to try and overcome these. So these are the type of people who responded, and as with all e-surveys, there is always caveats, but this is incredibly broad and very impressive work. So it went across 122 countries, it was translated into six languages, and there were over 1,000 respondents. About 60% came from middle-income countries, 38% were women, and the median age is 35 to 44. They were 431 were identified as people living with HIV, and again, around about half were identified from key populations. So the main results they showed was that 51% of individual respondents supported offering treatment initiation to people living with HIV whose CD4 count is below or equal to 350 or 500. Offering people treatment regardless of CD4 count, so again, around about half the people who lived with HIV with co-infections thought this was a good idea, and 63% of people living with HIV in serodiscordant relationships thought this was a good idea. 42% of women living with HIV of reproductive age felt that this was a good idea, which is essentially approval of option B+. And key populations most frequently selected, sex workers and men who have sex with men, also essentially agreed that offering treatment as an option for people irrespective of CD4 count was something that they agreed with. So this is a slide just to show you, and again, it's on the poster if people have had a chance to see it, but what were the most challenging barriers that people were identifying from this e-survey? And again, they unfortunately are not what we're surprised to see. They're essentially mostly related, as you can see down the left-hand side, to stigma, discrimination, lack of confidentiality, anticipated negative reactions from peers, from communities, criminalisation. And then for those people contemplating taking treatment, whether it was as PrEP or taking treatment for themselves living with HIV, there were quite understandably concerns about side effects, stockouts of drugs, and availability of monitoring to ensure that their treatment was safe in terms of viral load, CD4 count, and toxicities. When people were asked which groups should be offered PrEP, and again, this is around about 400 individuals responded to this. Most people felt that sex workers, men or women who were not in a position to negotiate safe sex, were clearly groups that were identified as those people who should be negotiated or available to have a PrEP if it was offered to them, and those who were potential victims of gender-based violence and young people. What I found interesting about this result was that there were many people, half the people who responded felt that the young adolescent girls or boys, and we heard from Helen Rees earlier that many of the young women, in particular in South Africa, are very vulnerable to HIV, but the respondents to the survey were over the age of 35, so it would be very interesting to see what younger people themselves think of this response. So in conclusion, from this really very broad e-survey, with, of course, the caveats that it required people to have access to the internet to be able to respond, be able to read and understand the questions appropriately, I think nobody could fault the fact that there was a very broad base of respondents to this. There is essentially community support for earlier initiation of treatment, with the proviso that the new regimens are simpler to take and safer. Targeted treatment use for treatment and prevention is felt to be acceptable, but successful treatment programs required a rights-based approach, a comprehensive intervention package prioritised by people living with HIV in other affected communities. And as I think we've mentioned, and it's perfectly reasonable in the context of a survey, this is a non-randomised sample and required internet access, and optional questions will affect statistical analysis. So I'd really just like to thank all the three groups and everybody who submitted an abstract to the meeting. And I'd now like to open the floor for people to ask questions to any of our three panellists who, of course, did all the work.
You looked over this way. Thank you. My name is Rave Amico. I had a question about the testing study. And what I was curious about is, with people starting antiretrovirals at home, and I apologize if this was presented and I just missed it, were they able to continue to receive their treatment at home, or were they eventually tried to be transferred out to a care center or clinic? Thank you.
Result, and then took up the offer of home initiation. We offered 2 weeks of treatment at home before transferring into the clinic, into the routine care system. The reason for that was, in our preliminary work in Blantyre and from elsewhere, we felt that the major barrier to kind of retention through that cascade was getting over the initial testing and ART eligibility assessment period. Previous studies have looked at facility initiation, then home delivery of care, and we kind of flipped that around the other way.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm allowed to ask just a quick follow-up question to that, is your impression as to how retention would be, or if you think that retention would be better if we try to then couple that with delivery in the community or mobile delivery of care?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer, but it's certainly worth investigating, I think.
My question is for the Malawi B Plus presentation. First, congratulations. It's a terrific piece of work, and we're all very proud of what you have achieved so far. We only hope more of the same coming from Malawi and elsewhere. I have a question and a comment. The question is, have you seen or noticed that by giving access to a treatment to the mother during the pregnancy preferentially, that create any tensions at home? With a partner, the children, if they were not eligible for treatment yet? And along those veins, I have a suggestion for the next study. I would call it B++. And what I would do is I would randomize the same scheme, but I would do B+ versus using B+ to use what your colleagues show, bring treatment to home and treat the family. That would be a great way to just move it to the next level.
Thank you very much. That's a very pertinent observation. I think you will see in our presentation, we looked at uptake versus retention as probably one of the causes for our loss to follow-up. So what we are observing is that the mothers will take the drug, but they will not start drinking the drug. Most of our loss to follow-ups did not come back after the first initiation visit. And anecdotally, we have actually found ARVs in the ladies' toilets. So essentially, they never wanted to go back home with those drugs and start trying to explain to the spouse what has happened. You are the one who's bringing HIV in this house and all those things. Yes, that is very true. And we are thinking that we need to put up measures, interventions to combat that, because it's responsible for most of our loss to follow-up. And some of the things we are looking at are probably intensifying couple counseling, coming up with partner slips, encouraging couple disclosure so that we assist these women in terms of the social issues that are evidently there at home.
Yes,
thank you. So, Sengani, I would also add giving them 2 self-test kits to take home, test as a partner at home. But so I'm from the self-testing world. And my question, Liz Corbett from London School, is to our Global Alliance speaker. Just, I was a little bit surprised at, if you like, how low the acceptability of early ART initiation was in your survey. So where you had those figures of 58% saying, yes, we should be starting between 350 and 500, were the others saying no, or was there a don't know category as well?
Right. We didn't give an option. In the way in which we designed the questionnaire, we certainly did not give an option for people to say no. What we did was to say at which level, and we assumed that people would want people to be on treatment at some point. And so what we offered was, at which CD4 count do you think this should be offered? And we also have to bear in mind that the sample which we asked people to respond was both people who were living with HIV, so they had their opinion about having had an experience of taking these drugs, as well as people who were HIV negative. We did an analysis then that looked at, were those responses really different, and we didn't find there was a difference at all. I mean, majority of the people, in terms of the most preferred band, were still 350 to 500, which was very good for us in terms of seeing that there is a consensus there, and also bearing in mind all the limitations of who was able to respond to this. To the questionnaire, especially because it was internet based, it certainly wasn't randomized sample, and it could have meant that maybe we would have gotten different results had we been able to do focus group discussions on the ground with people who are far away from health facilities, far away from internet access, and so on and so forth. But there was no option to say no, and 300 to 500 was the most popular choice.
Yeah, and there was no higher.
Pardon?
There was no universal test and treat option.
Oh, no, we didn't ask for that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We're out of time, I think, aren't we?
Thanks very
much. Please join me in thanking our distinguished panel and Sarah for doing such a fantastic job with the cultural repertoire session.